And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, May 6th, 2024. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. And afterwards, the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is WMATA.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls. If you would like to unmute yourself or mute yourself, you can press star six. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everyone who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon where it says mute, and that will mute or unmute when you would like to speak. And if you go under more, click on the raise hand icon, that will do the trick of raising your hand at just like Dr. Posner did right now.
Yes, Anu, there's something on the bottom now that says AI companion. Is that artificial intelligence for us to replace us?
That is AI. Yes, you are right, which I have not used the tool as of yet.
Thank
but
you.
I will be happy to explore and share more information about it, perhaps at the next meeting. I would appreciate for people, if you can please stay on mute unless you're speaking, because that helps us eliminate any external noise. And just like I shared, you can unmute yourself when you would like to make a comment. And if you're able to use the tools of virtually raising your hands, that allows us, that informs us that somebody's trying to make a comment, and we can have one speaker at a time. So, and we can have the speakers in the order they raise their hands also. as you probably remember, we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. And I would request everyone to please state your name before you speak, before you make your comments, because it helps the interpreters doing their job well. It also helps everyone who is listening on the phone calls when they know who the speaker is. When people listen to the audio of the meeting, it also helps them knowing who the speakers were at the time. We also request speakers to please describe themselves briefly when initially speaking. For instance, I'm a female, I'm Asian Indian, I wear reading glasses, and I have long dark hair. Chair Sheehan, if you concur, I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Perfect. Thank you, and that'd be great.
Great. And before I start reading the agenda, I would like to share my screen. So if you would give me a quick moment. And if somebody can confirm that they can see my screen, I would appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Okay. So as soon as I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Patrick Sheehan, chair of the AAC committee, will go through the approval of today's meeting agenda, last month's meeting minutes, and the board report. At 5:40, we will have Alyssa McDade. She is the senior director of organizational development, technical training, and development. She will be providing us with safety and readiness team report. At 6 p.m., we will have Alex Block. He is the manager of strategic initiatives, strategy, and policy. He would be discussing the Metro budget fiscal year 2025. As you probably know, there was a discussion and the decision at the last board meeting in April. At 6:45, we will take any public comments. 7 p.m., we will take the bus and rail subcommittee report. 7:15, we will have the Metro Access Subcommittee report, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 7:30. I'm going to stop sharing my screen now. Moving on to the AAC members' attendance. When I call out your name,
you are now unmuted.
Confirm your presence. Azhar Atura, Donnie Bush, Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Tuan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsell.
She's Sandy here.
Connected with on the meeting. Yeah. Thank you. Phil Posner.
I'm in the meeting.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaphore.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Present.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub.
Present.
Thank you. All right. That concludes today's meeting roster. Chair Sheehan, I would quickly like to inform any members of the public that if they would like to make any comments, they can either raise their virtual hands when we begin the public comment section, or if they're able to, they can send me a meeting in the chat to let me know that they would like to make any comments so that we can take public comments in the order we receive.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Was that Paul?
Rico Dancy.
Oh, Rico. Oh, Rico. Thank you, Rico. Chair Sheehan, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Very good. Thank you, Anu. Appreciate that. And welcome, everybody, tonight. Let's see. So we have review of the agenda, review of minutes, and review of board reports. Do I have any, do I have a motion to accept the agenda as submitted?
No, move.
Second, no. Paul Simmelfort.
Thank you, Paul. Okay. Very good. Any additions to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll consider the agenda approved as submitted. Going next to the minutes. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes as presented?
Yes. Paul, what seconds?
Did I get a second from you, Paul?
She did.
Okay, good. No additions or corrections. Are there any objections to the minutes as written? Hearing none, we'll accept the minutes as written. Thank you. We'll go to next to the board report. Do I have a motion to accept the board report as submitted?
Submit.
Very good.
Only addition, Pat, is based on what we have said tonight or in the subcommittees to amend it as needed.
It's going to be kind of hard, Paul, since we can amend it. We'll be amending it after I give it, I think, because the board meeting is this Thursday.
Oh, okay. Based on anything that might be tonight that we say. Tonight, amended. Yeah. Okay.
However, I understand what you're saying, Paul. Very good. Do I have any objections to the board report? Hearing none, we'll accept the board report as submitted. Okay. Thank you, everybody. So I have Alyssa McDade giving us the safety and readiness report. Appreciate you coming, Alyssa. And I think the committee will certainly get a lot out of this report. I think I heard some of this at the RAC meeting. So you're up, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, and good evening to everyone. My name is Alyssa McDade. I'm the Senior Director of Technical Training and Development within Safety and Readiness. I'm a woman, and I'm wearing reading glasses. I have short auburn hair. I'm going to share my screen. Oh, if I'm allowed to, Anu, can I share my screen? Yeah.
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. I am now sharing my screen. Are you able to see it?
Not yet.
Not
No.
yet. Let me try again.
This is Anu. Chair Sheehan, we may have. Okay, so we'll just wait for a moment for Elisa to get connected, and she
Okay.
is.
Yeah, I saw where she dropped. Thank you, Anu.
Yes.
I apologize. I dropped. I'm back. So let me try to share my screen again.
Sure.
Okay. Are you
Oh,
able
there
to
you
see
go.
my screen
Yeah.
now?
Yes, we
Yeah.
are. Yes,
Thanks,
thank you.
Alyssa.
Okay. And do you see a screen that says Accessibility Advisory Committee?
Yes, we
Yeah.
do.
Yes. Has different, like, has like the lines of the metro.
Perfect. Okay. Wonderful. I have, okay. Two, I had some pop-ups. Zoom canceled on me unexpectedly, and I was getting pop-ups associated with that. So now I can see everything clearly. Okay, so I wanted to just share with you some updates on our technical training and development organization. So technical training and development it was brought together with the agency wide realignment in November of 2022. And that realignment brought together technical training, maintenance training, operational for bus and operational for rail training under one umbrella called technical training and development, all reporting up th through me to Teresa Impastato, our chief safety officer and chief safety and readiness officer. And so now we are one office. And so wanted just to set that stage for you as I talk through some of the improvements that we've been doing and making to make our training more accessible. And so the next thing I want to share, we've begun to use digital forms to review and provide feedback to our training instructors. And so one of the great things that these digital forms has allowed us to do is to make the information more accessible to the folks who are using the form. It allows us to it comes with an immersive reader, which allows us to allows the reader to customize the way the text looks for easier reading, and they can also have the text read aloud to them. And then the forms can be translated to multiple languages as needed. So there's at least three languages that can be chosen to have the information translated to the reader's preferred language. The next thing we've been looking at is we're really in the process of exploring deploying bite-sized training and instructional reminders through what we call micro-learning. And these were this is like short form videos that you might see on YouTube or I think one of our curriculum developers likes to call it TikTok style training. So short form videos, really easy to consume. And so we're currently developing procedures as a foundation to build this effort. We want to build a video library. And part of that process, we're making sure, and we want to make sure that these are very accessible and highly available. So not only accessible or highly available through different modes of or different devices, such as someone's phone or a computer, but also utilizing some of the features that are native to those types of platforms, such as closed caption and language translation. So that is part of the procedure development that we're undergoing right now. And we hope to really get these going in the next fiscal year. The next thing is more of a physical environment. We have a training lab for our automatic train control training. And this consists of a track in a warehouse style room that has the automatic train control switches and micro boxes for our students to be able to try things out and to learn hands-on. But we want to make sure that that was accessible. And typically a track can be difficult to navigate around. So it was designed so that we could accommodate guests with limited mobility and make it wheelchair accessible to get to all sides of the track. And to allow folks to get from one side to the other without having to walk over the track. So they could walk around it or move around it with their mobility device, whichever was the best option for them. The room, it's also set up to allow different viewing angles for folks to be able to see exactly what's going on. So it's kind of a neat room that just gives lots of folks lots of access to be able to see what's happening on our, with our switches and our control boxes. And then the next thing I wanted to share is some work that we're doing with our bus operator training. With bus operations training, we currently provide training to ensure bus accessibility equipment is operational during pre-trip preparations, and that operators also practice deployment of the ramp and kneeling during skills training. But what we're working on right now is adding additional training opportunities to provide the bus operator candidates a firsthand understanding of the experience of a person using a mobility device, including boarding and riding the bus, and using bus kneeling and securement techniques that are demonstrated, practiced, and evaluated during training. So those are just a few of the things that we're working on to make training more accessible. Look forward to any questions that you have.
This is interesting. Questions from the committee? Anu?
I see Mr. Weintraub has his hand up.
Okay.
Hi. I was wondering about safety. Is like I also need to think about like how safety in the subway stations. Because with after all those incidents where people have fallen on the track, got either seriously injured or killed, depending on the incident when it happened, I was wondering if there's a way to like prevent that happening, like putting like a railing and then with gates that only open when the doors of the train opens and close back when the doors of the train close, so that way people. To keep people from falling on the tracks. So and it's very, very sad or hard in hearing that somebody's been seriously injured, either obtained a disability, or have died from these kind of incidents.
I thank you. That is a grave concern, and it's certainly not my area of expertise. but I understand that that is something being explored in the future, with our as we advance with our automatic train operations and advanced signal systems, that that is what they call platform gates has been explored. I don't know where it is in the process, in terms of when we could install something like that, but it's definitely something that I understand has been considered.
Good. Other questions? Thank you, Alyssa. Anu, do you see any hands?
I have my hand up.
Oh, I don't know if we're just if we've lost Anu in the process. Go ahead, Tina.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm here. I was having very difficult time unmuting myself. I apologize for that. So I see Debbie Fisher, followed by Sandy, and then Tino, and then Thomas. So
Oh,
Debbie, go
okay.
ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Anu.
Thank you. This sounds great. My question has to do with actually training staff to work with riders with a variety of cognitive and psychological disabilities, dealing with anxiety, dealing with concerns about exiting, entering, when is the next stop, those who miss their stop, the sort of the range of behaviors that can present themselves, and if not responded to appropriately, can easily become out of hand and problematic.
Thank you for that comment. That's definitely something I would like to take back to our team to look at how we could incorporate that into our customer service training.
That would be great. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
I'm wondering also, since we have that level of expertise here, and Debbie, I don't mean to speak for you, but this might apply in other areas also. If I think if members of this committee could be asked to participate and help in educating some of your folks, that might be a good thing.
I would
Okay.
be happy to assist in any way that I can, and I think there probably are others in the, on the committee who could be of help, but I'm certainly happy to do that.
I can speak in one area. I know that in the past, folks that have used service animals, guide dogs, have wanted to be able to participate and give their expertise with respect to training and letting people know, just even, you know, in general, that the dogs that are coming on board are trained and they're not pets. And sometimes people think that they are. And so they, you know, you'd think that in this day and age by now that people don't, but it's always a process of continuous training. So I think people with disabilities can be the best judge of, you know, how to treat people with disabilities and give more information. So I guess going back to your folks and, you know, with our expertise, I think we could add some sensitivity training to how to work with
Wonderful.
certain disabilities. Yeah, that would be
Yeah,
useful. And
absolutely.
I think members of the committee could also find it useful, particularly your exhibits. You've got some other hands.
Yes, we do. We
No?
have
Yes.
Sandy Musil, followed by Tino Calabia, then Thomas Mangrum, and then Steve Kaplan.
Okay.
Sandy, go ahead, please.
This is Sandy Newsell, a senior white woman with gray white hair wearing glasses. And following on to what others have said, I think training for AAC members could help guide training for the WMATA employees. In particular, I was thinking of the example of the train tracks. I've been told, and I always forget, but training, if you fall onto the tracks, where to go, where is it most safe to be? And I think that would be educational. For the bus boarding. Myself, I'm legally blind. Just getting on the bus and showing bus operators, you know, how I might look like I'm lost. Well, I am sort of, but, kind of feeling my way to get where I want to go. I'd be happy to participate to help with training modules or, you know, one-on-one training with your operators.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that you're volunteering and your thoughts about that. I think there's also potentially opportunities to work with some of our the folks that do the rider training. And so I'd be happy to reach out to them as well. Sounds like there's two needs here.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Tino, followed by Thomas, and then Steve. Tino, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Tino. I'm a Filipino American and I have thinning gray hair. I'm wearing a unbuttoned brown shirt. With respect to Philip Weintraub's question about or point about riders mistakenly falling between cars, that's been a concern of the committees for as long as I've been on, and we have that's what prompted us to recommend that open gangways trains be adopted, because the space between two cars is handled better that way than in the earlier series of trains. The other thing I could mention is that in terms of safety on the platforms, several months back, we were told that Randy Clark has been considering at some point in the future, because it would probably be expensive, to build station platforms such as are at Dulles Airport. These glass platforms only open once the rail car is in the station, and the station platforms only open when the door to the train on the side that the riders are on opens. So that would be an immense use and safety. But I imagine because of the cost, it'll be some time before we'll be able to afford it. But Randy Clark has already at least said somewhere that he would consider creating that for safety on the platform.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Just to interject here, it's Jamie Johnson, Senior Vice President of Safety. I'm just joining this call to represent Teresa, who's Alyssa and my boss, and she wanted to be here today but wasn't able to. This is you're absolutely right. It's a very hot topic on Randy's radar. At the moment, they're in the design phase of a pilot at Bethesda Station to design those platform doors that you describe, which are used in Far East, out in Japan and Singapore, and also in London and other parts of Europe. But you're absolutely right. They're extremely expensive. It wouldn't be tens of millions. It would be hundreds of millions of dollars. So at the moment, we're scoping it out, seeing what the impact is. And Bethesda Station is currently slated as the station to conduct that pilot, but it's in the very early stages.
Could you describe it? I just mentioned it as a platform that appears in the Dulles Airport stations. But I didn't describe it, and I'm not sure I could describe it well, but could you?
I think what we're talking about here is platform doors.
Yes.
We call them. So we have trains that have doors, and the proposal is to put the platform glass doors on the platforms, which open after the train doors open. So anyone on the platform, there isn't a risk of falling onto the track. And they are tried and tested elsewhere, but in almost all cases, they are by design part of a new station and not retrofitted, which becomes quite expensive. So that's what we're looking at currently.
But there is still a gap between the platform and the car that you have to be careful of. It protects you from falling between cars, but you have to be careful not to trip when you're getting from the platform, because the train is not flush up against the platform on the other side of those doors. So it's a fall safety. It gives you some safety for falling between cars, but you still have to worry about tripping going into the door, because there is a gap.
Absolutely. There is a gap. It prevents you from falling on the track when the train's not there, ultimately.
I have circulated several months back a picture of the Dulles platform, and I'll try and find it and recirculate it to people so they'll know what we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Tino. And yeah, you see, once that is in a state where there's a prototype or whatever, I think that this committee would certainly like to see that. First time I've heard of that. So. Interesting. Thank you, Tina.
Thank you, Tina, and thank you, Jamie. Next would be Thomas Mangrum, followed by Steve Kaplan. So, Thomas, go ahead, please.
Yes. This is Thomas. With the train tracks and stuff, is Zoo going to make it possible, even when we end the subway line, if something happens, we'd be able to use our chairs, or we still got to be tended to by other people and leave our chairs on the train? Because some of us is totally dependent on the chairs. And also, when it comes to testing out the equipment, I would like to see more people that use motor chairs to show up also. Because right now, when it comes to the chairs, there have been a lot of times that it's just been me and Mrs. Rush that shows up, and I'm the only one that show up in a motor chair. So it would be nice to have other people's opinion also along with mine. So if somebody could like ask people on the committee, could they show up? Because I know we're not making people show up, but they could be asked to do so, you know, just in case some equipment got to get tested out and I can't be there. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Jamie, can I ask you, from the emergency management hat that you sometimes wear, could you respond to Thomas's question about an emergency on the track and whether or not he is able to take his wheelchair with him if there's an emergency? And he has to be, as I understand it, your question is if you have to be evacuated from the train. Is that correct?
Yes, that was my question.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I think the answer is, we defer to the fire department in those situations, and they make an assessment based on the situation, your individual safety and the safety of others and the situation which is faced. But ultimately, we would always want to keep you with your chair, and it would be an exceptional circumstance that doesn't allow that.
Okay.
Thank you. And thank you, Jamie.
And Thomas, if you want to talk offline about this, I'd be more than happy. Maybe this doesn't allow us to me to understand exactly what you mean. So I'll share my email with Anu, and maybe we could speak later in the week about this one.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jamie. Steve, you're up next, so go ahead.
Sure. Tino, did you have a follow-up to what was just discussed? I see your hand up.
I do.
Why don't you do that first?
Okay. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, a contractor brought out an inter-car barrier, and it was actually on trains at a Maryland station, and the committee was invited, but only Denise Rush and I went. So really, this is to encourage more people to inspect these things when they come out. We have not been ignored when it comes to showing us new materials. We have been asked, as certainly in terms of inter-car barriers, on one occasion to come, and only two of us showed up. So it's up to other people to participate. Yes, Steve.
Okay, thank you.
Steve.
Okay, hi. All right, thank you. Steve Caffin, Caucasian, Black with some gray, and I said, what else? And wearing a dark blue turtleneck, but not all the way up because it's warm here. I attended the RAC meeting last week, and that was to make a particular comment, and it's apropos to what we're talking about today. I can tell from the fare readers, the digital readers on the buses, that pretty soon the buses are going to be moving towards side door entry because the fare readers are sitting there. And I see as of this morning, the coverings which had been on them are taken off. So so it's just a matter of time, probably in the spring or maybe in the summer. Here's my concern, and this is why I went to speak at the RAC. There is a vulnerability that passengers have when there's boarding on the side door. And I'm not talking about during the day when there's pretty good amount of traffic, because we know most people are sitting before the front, the side door. So that is, they're facing front, or in the very front, they're facing each other side, and they're not focused upon the comings and goings of the at the back door. In the evening, there may be just a few people on a bus, and there is a vulnerability that passengers have at that particular hour. And my recommendation at the RAC, and it was just a public comment, not a discussion, was that at a particular time of day, let's say 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, when really there's not much of a confluence of people boarding anyway to need the side door, that only the front door be used. And the principal reason is that even though the driver is, certainly doesn't exercise any physical control or what have you, he or she is a gatekeeper. And at that hour, there's a true safety and security concern with whomever boarding in the middle and jumping out very quickly and perhaps doing things we don't want to happen. And I just want to raise that with you. And my question is, if that does happen, is there any particular training, either watchful training or what have you, that needs to be given to the operators to deal with middle door boarding?
Oh, that's a great question, Mr. Caffin. I don't know the answer to that at this time, but we can certainly look into that and see what additional training might be needed, or if there is additional security needed. And following up on your suggestion about limiting the time of day that that is operational, I'm happy to follow up on any additional training needed.
I think it's very important. I think there's a real vulnerability and almost a fear, if you will, of sitting very far behind the first seats in a bus after hours if that middle door is going to be open past a certain hour. You know, especially depending upon where the bus is going in the area and what have you. One other quickie observation that may be of interest to you is that I've noticed that bus operators are not always pulling up parallel to the curb.
Okay.
When they see a person in need of boarding, boarding directly, you know, using the ramp. And you may just need a reminder during training that they need to be watchful of that. And if necessary, be sure that they do what they need to do.
Right, we will. I'll take that under advisement. I really appreciate that comment.
All right, sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alyssa, thank you very much. Jamie, thank you very much for coming. I think that there is a lot here that we can do to partner, particularly with the training aspect of some of our subject matter experts. So I'd like to continue this conversation and see how we can be interactive with you, provide expertise where we can, and help make sure the training is effective. And we can assist where we can with our expertise.
Wonderful.
That'd be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Sheehan.
Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all. Okay, have a good night.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Thank you.
Very Elizabeth. Good.
Thank you, Jamie. Chair Sheehan, this is, and I just want to state for the entire AAC, if you have any further questions or comments, please do share those with me, and I will be happy to forward them and share those with Elisa and Jamie. So thank you.
Yeah. Excellent. That's great. I think that's an excellent idea. I see there's a lot of areas where we can participate perhaps and get additional education. So very good. I'm glad we had that presentation. Okay. Very good. Next, we have our discussion on the 2025 budget, Alex Block, who is with Strategic Initiatives, Strategic Planning, and Policy. Alex, this has been a fun subject for us for what? I'm sure it's been funner for you for about 8 or 9 months.
Yes, many months.
Last October, yeah. But I would just like to see, having gone to the board meetings and this group being participated in it, and really what the jurisdictions and all have done, and the amount of work that was done by staff, by people, by Natunde, Tom, and others, yeoman's work. And I'm just really pleased with where we are. But I'll let you take it away and give us your wisdom. And thank you so much for all the work that has been done. I didn't think we were going to get where we got, but floor is yours.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much. Can you all see my screen with the full screen slide?
Yes.
Okay, great. Again, thank you so much. My name is Alex Block with the Office of Strategy and Policy. I have brown hair, a white male with a beard, wearing a white button-down shirt with a green tie. So I am going to walk through very briefly a summary of the budget that the board adopted on April 25th. Very exciting to have a full budget adopted. Our budget process, in its ideal, is very much guided by our strategic plan, where we have four main goals for the organization, for service excellence, for talented teams, for partnering with the region, and for sustainability, both environmental sustainability and financial sustainability. And as you all know, this budget situation has stressed all of those goals. We were forced to put out, in order to close our initial budget deficit, a proposed budget that had very poor service. It had large layoffs to our team. It would harm our partnership with the region in providing service, and would not be a sustainable outcome either in terms of our environmental outcomes for the region or for solving our long-term fiscal issues. However, the great news is that we've come, the region has come together with some additional funding in order to approve our FY25 budget with only some modest changes to service. So the top line takeaway for customers is this budget will generate more fare revenue for Metro, primarily through a fare increase that is mostly a 12.5% increase and up to a 25% increase on nights and weekends. We're also anticipating some additional revenue from reduced fare evasion with the ongoing rollout of the saloon-style fare gate retrofits on the rail system, as well as some relative ease of payment with mobile technology and the ongoing implementation of the Metro Lift reduced fare program. On the rail side, there are some targeted service cuts. These are mostly cuts that exist only on paper, compared to the service that was authorized in our FY24 budget. In practice, this will be very similar rail service to what we are what customers are seeing out of the system today, which I think is a great opportunity. We will be operating more six-car trains to be able to meet our capacity needs while maintaining some efficiencies in terms of traction power usage. But otherwise, the service on the rail system should be very similar to what we see today. On the bus side, it maintains the existing service levels and sets the stage for the eventual implementation of the Better Bus Network redesign, which hopefully there will be more information posted about that this week, as the board will have on their agenda for Thursday, authorizing public hearings on the new Better Bus Network. And then for Metro Access, it does maintain the existing current service area. There are no changes to the Metro Access service area in the FY25 budget. How we got here is with some additional, substantial additional investment from all of our partners in the region, an additional $463 million above and beyond the normal subsidy our funders give to us for our daily operations. You combine that with some one-time savings and some ongoing expense savings, as well as some preventative maintenance transfer from our capital budget to our operating budget, and that's how we are able to close the $750 million gap. And so this is a great news for FY25 in that it allows us to maintain service going forward. However, we do still have the ongoing structural funding deficit for FY26 and beyond on the operating budget. And for the capital budget, because we are using this preventative maintenance transfer, this is part of the sort of borrowing from one pocket to pay the other. So the more money we transfer from preventative maintenance, the further that erodes our eventual ability to fund capital improvements. So right now, we are forecasting that we will reach our debt limit for the capital preventative maintenance program in FY28, where previously it was forecast in FY29. So we still have long-term issues and challenges with both our capital and operating funding. Last week, our board of directors met together with the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments to begin regional discussion about funding for transit in the region and the kind of service that we would like to see. So there's more work to do there, but was very encouraged by the additional investment from the region in this year to maintain good service so that we continue to grow ridership and provide excellent service for our customers. So where things stand in terms of the overall budget is that the board adopted it on April 25th. That gives us the remainder of May and June to do implementation for changes, mostly again related to the fares. And our new fiscal year will begin on July 1st in FY25. I don't think we have announced an official effective date yet for when the new fares would take effect. So stay tuned for that. But I would anticipate that would be somewhere around on or about July 1st. Oftentimes, we try to time that actual implementation plus or minus a few days in order to have it fall on a weekend. But that's where things stand overall. We're very excited to move forward and be able to maintain good service. And I hope I want to thank you all of your public comments that the AAC was able to provide and that individuals were able to provide as well. That was very helpful in guiding the board's deliberations for the importance of maintaining service as much as possible. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any for me.
So we have several hands up at this point in the order. Denise Rush, followed by Paul Samuelford, afterwards Sandy Newsell, Steve Kaffin, and Phil Posner. So Ms. Rush, go ahead.
This is Denise Rush. My question, you did not announce the change in payment for Metro Access, a paratransit service. Could you announce the amount that the paratransit service customers will be paying, and also how they're going to be notified if there's any change? You say there isn't any, but I haven't seen it in writing or read it anywhere.
Sure. Great question. Yes. So there will be no change in the service area or any of the other service characteristics because the board did not make any changes to the span of service or routes for the bus network or for the rail system either. So all of the service area should remain and the service hours should remain exactly the same. And there was no change to the policy for the Metro Access service area either. For the fares, because it was a 12.5% increase in fares, what that means is that the bus fare will go from $2 to $2.25, and then the Metro Access fare will go from $4 to $4.50, the cap.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Paul Samuelford. Paul, go ahead.
Paul Samuelford here, the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. I don't know if you can answer this question right now because I'm looking at that 552-page recommendation for the F25 budget, and I'm looking at page 9 at the top, and I don't expect to answer at this point, but maybe Mr. Blake can answer it during the Metro Access Subcommittee later this month. But it talks about a resolve that the 3/4 of a mile zone for the provision of Metro Access service in the resolution 2010-31 is suspended until June 30th, 2026 to freeze existing paratransit service area as it exists and allow staff to evaluate the impact of Metro bus service changes on paratransit. So does that mean that this suspension in service, and it does not need to be answered at this meeting, I just want it to be researched by the time it gets to in 2 weeks, is the service area and times are going to be suspended and remain the same until June 30th, 2026? It does not have to be answered. I'm just putting that question out on record at this point.
I will try to follow up to be sure.
That's why I want to give you a lead time because I see that provision in that 526 document where I'm just reading it for verbatim on the top of page 9.
Yes.
After that resolved. I don't want to answer right now because we're going to have a full discussion with Mr. Blake, but as you consult with him, I would like that to be addressed at the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting that's coming in 2 weeks.
Yes. My understanding is that is the legal language that maintains the service area as it was, and this goes back several years, that every year that clause has been included to keep the access area the same, even though there have been changes in the bus network since that time.
Correct. Mr. Block,
so,
can I add to that?
Okay. I expect to be answered right now because I know you're going to have a full discussion.
No, but you're throwing it out there and there are people listening, and I don't like people to leave a meeting, you know, uncertain. Right now, that's the language that the leadership at the time and the board and the leadership continues, and this board has continued to allow the Metro Access service area and hours to be what we established a few years ago
while allowing bus and rail to look for efficiencies before paratransit customers are impacted. And to my knowledge, the board did not repeal that in this budget. So as Mr. Block pointed out at the beginning, there are no changes to Metro Access Service. It's a win. Take the win. It's
oh,
a
no,
win.
I'm just saying. It's saying until 2026. That's why I'm just asking that.
Right.
The question does have to be answered now, but...
We'll review that in time. And by 2026, the Better Bus Network should have been, if not already in place, fully thought out and sort of developed, and we know where we are, and that's when some tougher decisions may have to be made. But for now, there are no changes. There isn't a new 450 fare. But given, I think, the testimony of so many people, including many on this call and who've been participating, this budget was a huge win for Metro Access customers.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Sandy Newsell. Sandy, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandy Newsell. Similar to the question, will there be an announcement? When will there be an announcement about Metro Access fare changes and there are no service changes? For rail, is there going to be a public announcement about, even though the service area will continue the same, the changes in frequency of trains for rush hour and off-peak hours and more six-car trains than now? Will there be some sort of public announcement just to help inform the public and us who do ride rail?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know there will certainly be public communication about the fares because it's a very substantial fare change. And this is the first broad-based fare increase that we've had in quite some time. We did have a substantial fare restructuring on the rail side in FY24. But there will definitely be public communication about the changes in fares. And I don't have a timeline handy at the moment, but I can get back to you with more information on that. On the rail service, I imagine it will also be concurrent with that. But again, those changes are fairly minor compared to the kind of service that we are already seeing today. So off the top of my head, it's the one change at peak hour or off-peak hours would be the Orange Line frequency would be reduced from 10 minutes to 12 minutes. And that will match. So the blue, orange, and silver lines will each operate at the same frequency. And we are hopeful that will have some operational benefits to have all three of those services that share the same tracks on the same cadence and hopefully be more reliable overall. And then the other change will be some adjustments to the green and yellow line service operating every 8 minutes on weekends. Which is what they're doing right now, but it's formalizing that change. The one other change that's a little bit technical is we are using what we call the sort of the narrower peak hours, where again, because we don't have the same volume of rush hour commuters, that the rush hour period will last only approximately 2 hours in the morning and in the afternoon. So it varies a little bit precisely where you are on the system, but it's approximately from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Whereas in the past, it was a much longer span. It was more like 3 or 4 hours. So those are the changes. And those, again, are very much similar to what we are running right now in terms of service. So I will follow up on the specific outreach plan for those changes. But there will definitely be robust public engagement as we get closer to the change in the fares.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Steve Caffin. Steve, go ahead, please.
Oh, thanks. In building the estimated revenues, I'm sure that taken into account was the fare evasion amounts, the amounts, you know, the riders without paying fares. I'm wondering what the percentage of that for bus and rail were used in the calculation of estimated revenues.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer off the top of my head. I do know that it's a slightly different process, and it's like any estimate, this is it's a it's better than a guess, but it is an estimate, and we'll have to see how customers respond. So on bus, one of the things we know is an issue today is that a lot of our fare boxes are malfunctioning. And so we think there's a lot of revenue to be gained just by having functioning fare boxes out on the bus system, more so than a change in fare evasion, or an increase in enforcement. On the rail side, we are seeing a substantial change already in the rate of fare evasion just from, we're only about roughly halfway through the fare gate retrofits. So we, hopefully we'll see that number to continue to go down. But it's very much a difficult thing to put a precise number on it. It is fairly small in the grand scheme of things, but at the, I can try to follow up if with a more detail
All right. All right.
if you'd like.
All right.
Steve,
All right.
Steve.
Thanks, Alex. I beg to differ with you on the bus. Yes, you're right. There. I see more readers out of service, but those side readers, the new ones, are see. For the most part, and they're taken out of service a good number of times, are working pretty well. But many people that's still just walking on, and I will I'm not the discussion isn't the issues with walking on or not. I'm just wondering if you if a percentage an estimated percentage was used in calculating the estimated actual revenues. And I guess what you're saying is you there might have been, but you're just not sure what it is.
Yes, I do know it was a factor in the overall assumption. Part of the challenge for doing these sorts of budget estimates is we look at the change in the overall fares, because we do know when we increase fares, we see our ridership tend to go down, all else being equal. But we're maintaining our service and trying to factor all it's a lot of different elements going into the overall forecast to produce one number for the overall revenue estimate.
Okay, one quick question. A few years ago, the $2 weekend fare was initiated in part because the percentage of ridership was quite low, and but that's increasingly no longer the case, and we're seeing visitors returning en masse for the first time in some time. I'm just curious, what is the $2 fare gone, or is that still in effect?
Yes, it is. So for first, with the 12.5% increase, so our base fare for both rail and bus is now will now be 225, and then we
Yeah,
had the
my
flat fare for the for $2 under the old structure for nights and weekends on the rail
All
system.
right. I have just one more. I have one more sentence.
Well,
It
I
bo
was going to say.
it bothers me. It bothers me, and I'll pass it on to you because of your responsibility. It bothers me that we have lost leaders in a system where we're fighting for every dollar. And that $2 fare was, or 225 now, was because we had very low ridership and wanted to remind people that there still is a metro. What bothers me in particular is we get a huge number of visitors coming in on weekends, and we have the lowest fare to go from the airport, from our Dulles airport into town in the world for $2.25, which is lower than anywhere I know in the world. You can go between anywhere in our area and the airport. And it bothers me that we're not taking advantage of it.
So
That's Steve.
just to finish my thought, what I wanted to say also is that it's no longer a flat fare on nights and weekends. What the board had decided when we put out the budget in December, we had a range of different fare options, ranging from a 12.5% increase to up to a 25% fare increase. And so what the board had decided is for nights and weekends that they were going to exercise that option for the high end, the 25%. So it's not much in dollar terms. So on nights and weekends, it will be a variable distance-based fare again. It will no longer be a flat fare on the weekends. It will only range between 225 and 250. So it's a small range, but it is the increase that is the maximum that was allowed on the public docket as originally anticipated. So that is a bit of a structural change that I don't think was quite fully anticipated, but that was the board's decision. I think they were feeling similar to you on wanting to ensure there's more revenue recovery for night and weekend riders. So the night and weekend fares will be 250 or to 225.
Great.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Next would be Dr. Posner has raised his hand. Dr. Posner, do you still have a question or comment?
No, I have lowered my hand because Denise and Paul have already asked and the questions have been answered. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that you, if you had a question, it gets asked. Next would be Philippa Mazzell and then Philip Weintraub. So Philippa, go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Hold on, I'll put my camera on. Well, it won't go on. I can't get it on. But anyway, good evening, everyone. And I wanted to thank you for the report. And I, as Mr. Blake said, I'm happy to take the win on the fact that the service area won't change. And, you know, that, and I guess we'll deal with the fare increase. So I really just wanted to say that. Thanks for the report, and especially the good news that the service area is not going to be diminished. Steve basically already asked the question I wanted, which was, I was wondering if the fare gates were creating any additional revenues at this point in terms of, you know, the fare gators, although I do see one or two, but I don't see it like I used to see. It used to be every time I stepped into a metro anywhere, I saw people walking over the gates or whatever. I do see some climbing over the gates at Columbia Heights. There's a space between the manager's booth and the fare gates, and they just kind of leap over that or step over it, the very agile ones, but not like I used to see it. So anyway, I was just wondering, you know, if you're seeing any increase in revenues based on the fare gates, which I know will have to be paid for. And I think you already said you don't know if you can project any, you know, what the future earnings might be based on the new fare gates. So thank you.
The only thing that I read about that was that fare evasion was down 60% with the amount of gates that they have in so far. So I don't know what that equates to as far as revenue, but it is certainly having the effect that LaMonte expected.
Great, great. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Okay, thank you, Philippa. Next sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm done.
Okay, great. Thanks. Next is Philip Weintraub. Philip, go ahead.
I'm Phil Weintraub, and I like also let you know. I also another win is the stopping of the fare invasion, because that way we get the systems get more revenue. But it's still happening. And I noticed that the Twinbrook station should be the next target for to receive the new gates, because every time I've gone to the station, I've seen someone stepping over the gates, and I think we really need to continue cutting down on that.
Yes, okay. Totally agree. I believe I don't know the specific timing, but I know that the general manager has mentioned that the we're on track to hopefully have all of these all of the stations retrofitted by the end of the year, and making great progress on that. So very excited for more and more stations to get the new gates. So stay tuned. I don't have an estimate on Twinbrook in particular, but I know it will happen in the near future.
Anu, if I can raise my hand, this is Pat. I don't know if there's anybody else who wanted to speak before me.
I see Tino raised his hand.
With respect to the fare gates, I've been in stations where the new fare gates have been installed. It's my guess is that, or from what I've seen, I think that those who had formerly jumped over the gates, that's been reduced. But there's still what some refer to as tailgating. That is, a person goes through, and quickly behind that person, another person goes through. And I don't know how you can fix that unless there are police enforcement who not only see the incident, but also stop the person and question them. And maybe that would lead to a fine. Thank you.
So, Alex, my thank you, Tina. My last question for you is, you mentioned a regional effort that's being put together to talk about how we're going to think about this region as a transit area, as opposed to, you know, all the jurisdictions doing one thing. Do you have any more information on that? There's a couple of things that I wanted to talk to the committee about on that, but maybe you could lead off with any more information that you have on that regional group.
I can try to follow up with some additional information. That the kickoff meeting was this last week, a joint meeting of our board of directors and the Council of Governments Transportation Planning Board. And they had a great conversation, a discussion, and with more meetings to follow. So I know there will be more discussions throughout the summer as it will lead into our next FY26 budget deliberations. But that's the only information I have off the top of my head at this time.
Okay. And I'll just tell the committee that I think you will be getting more information on it. I've asked Anu to send out a link for the meeting they had at the Mayflower Hotel on Wednesday. I think it would be important for the committee to look at that. We, the AAC, has been asked to participate in one of the two teams that will be crafting solutions for the regional area over the next year. Community Partners Advisory Group is one of the groups that will be looked at, and there's probably 30 or so participants in that. And then there will be a technical advisory group, which will be much more technical as far as the individuals that are involved in all of this, with technical bus and rail and other regional transit partners. The scope of the effort is going to be quite extensive. It's not just going to be Metro. Metro is one of the partners. They're also going to be bringing in VRE, Amtrak, and at least 12 other bus networks that are in the region. So I think that it's important for us to take a look at the scope of the work that's going to be asked. There'll be some more meetings that AAC will be involved in, and I think looking at accessibility region-wide is going to be a good thing. All too often, we've seen it bolted on at the end of the process, and now we'll be at the beginning stages. So I would advise folks, once you get that link, to take a listen to it. It's a couple hours long, but I think it's worth it. And we'll really be looking at not just WMATA accessibility, but we'll have input into the entire region. And we'll be talking about all kinds of transit and making sure accessibility is part of the equation, not just at WMATA. So we'll get more information on that as time goes by. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for bringing the good news to us, sir. Appreciate that. And all the hard work that went on from so many people. I was pretty amazed. I didn't expect the kind of budget that we would have on last Thursday when I heard the news. So congratulations to us. And I think moving forward, we're going to try to get a more of a funding mechanism in place so that we don't have to do this in 26.
No. Patrick, thank you so much for all of your support. It's been very helpful.
All right, great. Thank you,
Alex. I know.
Yes, Bill, I understand you're trying to make some comments. We are beginning the public comment section now. Chair Sheehan, if yes. No other comments, we can go straight to the public comments.
Very good.
Okay, great. So we have Bill Orleans, followed by Priscilla Prince, and I see Steve Kaffin. So, Bill, when you start speaking, the timer will begin. Go ahead, please.
Well, I hadn't heard back from you, so I stayed outside my house where I have Wi-Fi. Inside, I don't. I had wanted to raise a question with, I think his name was Alex. Everyone thus far seems content with the fact that we have a budget, even though we will all be paying more money for less service. I think we should be less content than we are. With regard to what Patrick raised and the meeting is coming, beginning soon. It is true that the task force will be an open meeting where public comment will be permitted. This was stated by the chair of the COG board, Charles Allen, in response to a question from the Montgomery executive, Mark Elrich. I'm blanking on his name. Elrich, yes. Thank you, Pat. In any event, and obviously the community stakeholders, among those will be AAC, will be open. But what Patrick referred to as the technical work groups, those meetings as it stands now will not be open. And those are the meetings that we should be most interested in attending, because that's where agency staff will be talking to other agency staff and jurisdictional staff. And that's where there should be an opportunity for the public to ask questions. I've said this continuously for a long time, and no one seems to recognize the importance, the greater importance of Metro's Jurisdiction Coordinating Committee, even in the board meetings and the board committee meetings. What's said by staff that we never hear, most of us never hear, is more important. It sets the agenda for what the board's committees, and then ultimately the board approves or disapproves, adopts or doesn't adopt. And I had wanted to ask Patrick to entertain a motion, if any member of the AAC is willing to make it, to resolve to ask the board of directors of WMATA, at least, since it's one of the two generators of this joint process going forward, to open up the technical work groups to the public and allowing the public to ask questions during the meetings of the technical work groups. Thank you, Patrick.
Okay.
Thank you.
And very good. That question was already asked by somebody else who said they wanted to have access to the technical work groups, and the chair of the COG said that was not going to be possible at that time.
Well, so I'm asking the AAC to ask the board engage the COG board chair in that decision of the COG board chair. So I'm asking for the AAC
I understand the question was already asked, though, Bill, and the answer was already given.
Well, you know, sometimes it's necessary to ask a question a second time if the answer the first time is no. And if you agree that there's relatively more importance in the work of the work groups than the public meetings of the task force and also of the stakeholders advisory groups, then it's important to ask the question again. I would make it a demand, not a request, but out of deference to you, Patrick, who would prefer to request than demand, I'm, and maybe most of the members, if not all of the members of the AAC, I'm simply asking that the AAC make the ask.
Let's find out.
You may be told no again, but at least you would make the attempt.
We will attempt to, because we haven't even seen the scope of what the work is going to be and what the technical group is going to be doing. Let's research what the technical group is going to be doing and see if we can address those questions as also part of the community partners advisory group that we are in. This is the first time that the AAC has heard about this committee. And so we need to get more educated over time and see what we're supposed to be doing and what the scope of the work is going to be that we're asked to do.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Priscilla Prince. When you start speaking, the timer will pick up, 2 minutes will begin. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. Thank you for having me here. This is my first time here, so my comment is not really towards what was presented tonight, but as a public comment for safety, I noticed that on two trips or several trips in Union Station, the USPG area, where, you know, where the bus stations are at, there is no safety drop-off and pick-off area for clients. And they're telling us that we have to tell them where to go. So the drop-off is like on the street side. They implement this KISS new policy between WMATA, USPG, and Union Station itself. I did contact all three areas. It's very unsafe. There's no safety a designated area to be dropped off. My mom and I and my PCA were in the street, literally. And they were yelling at us, like, get out the way, get out them. Like, it was so unsafe. I do have ideas for that part too. Secondly, I wanted to say that the fares are fair to me, because when I did go to New York City, they did, you know, they have services where when you're traveling and you can't take in consideration the delays, it's not taken into consideration here. So can we sit down and talk about having some type of way we can have some type of when people are traveling air, the train, the buses or whatever, like some type of way that you can help us out, because we can't control if a bus is late, if a train is late, and if a subway is late. My name is Priscilla Prince. I enjoy your service at the Metro Access Service, and I really do love giving compliments and providing solutions and hope to return. Thank you.
Anu, let's see if we can follow up on that request. Do we have any other raised hands?
I apologize. I was speaking while I was on.
Yeah.
I just want to state for the record, Priscilla Prince, Ms. Prince had emailed us and informing us of her brief description of her concerns. And she was contacted by Metro Access and they are in communication. So I just wanted to state that for the record.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm going out of town for some time at the end of the month. And so I went online to put in, since I have a weekly bus pass, I went online to quickly put in the date I wanted to stop and the date I wanted to stop, to start again, as it's easily done with the mail and it's easily done with the Washington, my Washington Post subscription. Well, I'm still trying to find the location. I put in all kinds of keywords from vacation hole to stop or what have you. And all I can find is stopping entirely the unlimited pass, the weekly pass, and then having to start it up again, which I think is inefficient for WMATA as well as for the individual. And that brought to mind something else. One of the reasons why we're having fare evasion on the buses is that many of the people who are fare evading don't have Metro cards. And they don't have Metro cards because they have two opportunities. One is either to pay and pay and pay and pay when they get on, or the other is to have a weekly pass, which some people feel uncomfortable because they don't know week to week what their situation is going to look like. You know, if you're going to the hospital or if you have an out-of-town situation, I just found it's very difficult to cut off and cut back on. And so I now understand why there's so much sensitivity in not committing. The answer, I have 10 more seconds. The answer would be to go to a cumulative as opposed to a flat express fare. We, as London does, we pay up to a certain amount, $10 or $12, and then the rest of the week is free. If we don't use it that week, we don't pay. And I think it would increase the tremendously people who have cards. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Ms. Rush, go ahead. Ms. Rush, you're on mute. Okay, there you go. You're off of mute.
I had a hard time getting unmuted. I want to talk about, we had some departures in the departments, and I think the AAC committee needs to know who we may now refer our concerns to, with Carol Lopez leaving, with the lady we said goodbye to at the last meeting, and we had Maggie Butler. Who, if we have a concern, who do we talk to and who's in charge of what concern? We don't know as AAC members, and I think it's fair that we know that. Also, the committee needs to look at attendance. It's critical. We have some people we haven't seen all year, haven't heard from them, and we don't have a full committee, and people are getting ready to term off, and so we have one hole to the north and another hole to the south, you know. So I'd like to know who do we report to or ask questions or concerns to, because now we have three people that we normally use that we don't have now. And we have issues that we, concerns like the whiteboards. Rico, have you seen the whiteboards? We haven't seen the whiteboards. We have issues of the signage. Is it ready for when the system goes down in July? Are the signs and everything ready for that? Philippa, has anybody contacted you to find out which way to go in LaFont Plaza? We have a lot of issues that just we bring up and then they just disappear. The public restrooms, do we know where we can use them and where we can't? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. This is Anu. Chair Sheehan, if I may just take a quick moment. As far as the AAC is concerned, the protocol remains the same. Any questions, comments, concerns the AAC has, the members would continue to contact me. You have my email, you have my cell phone, you have all the modes of how to communicate with me. Depending upon what the question, what the concern may be, I will refer them forward as appropriate to the divisions and get the answers. As far as the attendance is concerned of the AAC members, yes, that's definitely being looked into. I know we have talked about the recruitment, and the AAC as a whole should be receiving some information from me this week. About Philippa's concerns, about wayfinding. We do have Sarah Meyer coming at the bus and rail subcommittee meeting to give us an update and to hold that discussion. And I know that I have missed some of the points, but I don't want to take over any of the reports time, but I'll be sure to follow up with you.
And I think, Anu, the other point regarding the shutdown of the red line, I think is also going to be a report on the
at the bus rail. Yes, that is correct.
At the bus rail meeting. I heard a rumor that we may have Randy Clark coming in June to speak to the committee. That's not confirmed. But if he does, I would like to see the committee, once you get the link on the Mayflower meeting between WMATA and COG, come with questions regarding that participation of the AAC, what they're going to expect and how they plan to move forward. It's a short turnaround. They want recommendations in place. I think what I heard was by January. So there'll be a lot of work that will be expected from the AAC, and maybe we can ask some more specific questions regarding that. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us. The other thing that I would say is, from a committee point of view, you're right, we are down a number of members. I think we already have the attendance policy in place, so we know what that is. And we really need to be recruiting members that can step up and participate in the committee, because I think there will be a number of us that will be approaching term limits. And so that's going to be something that we'll have to take a look at. So we need this committee to be viable and active and able to produce the recommendations that the board expects. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Tino, I see your hand is up. Did you have any comments for public comments or?
Yes. We never heard that Maggie Butler would be leaving, and she was supposedly in charge of what all of us do. Carol was kind enough to tell us that she was retiring and when, but what is the official capacity of Maggie Butler, and if she is gone, when do we find out who takes her?
Okay, this is Anu. Maggie Butler was the vice president of system-wide accessibility, and she has left the authority to take up another opportunity that was of higher interest to her. And she shared with us that she had initiated that process even before she joined WMATA. Carol, after that, you did hear that Lynn Bowers-Cox has retired and Carol Lopez has retired. So we do not have any information as far as positions being filled or who will be the replacements. As that information is available, we'll share that with the AAC.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Janice, do you have any comments for the public comments section?
Yes, please. I have one question. This evening we learned that the maximum fare for the Metro Access riders will be $4.50. Will there be any changes to the fare for the Abilities Ride customers?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I don't like that answer, sir.
2040 is coming. Yeah. Okay.
Not yet. That sounds ominous. Thank you.
It's a promotion. Let's keep it there.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. And Rico, I see your message. You would like to make some comments, so go ahead.
Okay. A supervisor bus number
274-18. It was Saturday. No, it was Sunday. Not Saturday, it was Sunday. I asked him what time do the ACES going to Costco's, and he said, do you have a phone? Can you look up yourself? You know, some of these supervisors are very rude, disrespectful. They need to teach these supervisors how to talk to customers. Okay, we are human beings. All somebody asked was a simple question. What time do the A6 going to Costco from Brooklyn? Okay, and he had to get that smart. Can somebody talk to supervisors on these, whatever supervisor is only checking these buses routes to make sure a supervisor is not rude? Another question. Only station manager, honestly, I have not seen the booking what Ms. Rush was talking about. I have not seen it. I have asked. I have not seen it at all. So them are my two questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rico. I'm hoping you've had a chance to report the bus supervisor incident with the customer service. If not, please email me the details and we'll share that with the bus division. Okay. Chair Sheehan, at this point, I do not see any more hands up.
Okay.
And it is 7:07. Did you want to go ahead and start the bus and rail subcommittee report as our
Yes, we'll do that. Thank you. Let's see. Tino, I believe you're up first.
Okay. At our last meeting, we discussed the Malt Expo of the open gangway trains and the new electric vehicle buses. Let's see. We also heard that Lynn Bowersox was retiring, and we thanked her for her service. We also learned that something that was mentioned earlier, this wasn't mentioned earlier in this meeting, but the whole question of between car barriers, that's still pending, apparently. We also, another item was the Better Bus Network redesign. Melissa Kim mentioned that to us. And by the way, that meeting is tomorrow of the Better Bus Redesign Network Committee. Third, we, during, let's see, during public comments, Denise recommended that the locations of the restrooms and stations be placed on maps. Maybe at some point, apart from my report on the minutes, somebody can tell us what the status is of locating the restrooms on maps. And one thing that I saw in the minutes, which I'm not familiar with, the term punch list items. Carol mentioned that on some of the things related to, I guess, maps, they, or maybe even the bathrooms, they are on a punch list item. What is a punch list item? That's not part of the report, but I'm just curious as to what a punch list item is. Maybe we ought to clarify that in the revised minutes.
Did you want to answer that, Anu?
You want to go ahead?
Yeah. Well, punch list just means, so let's say I get a call from, when I was in that role, let's just say I got a call from Tino, and Tino, you would say, Today, while I was traveling on the Red Line, I noticed at Gallery Place XYZ was out of compliance. And so I would take that note down and we would create a punch list of all those different things that Tino reported, things that our own station inspections identified, other customers let us know, and we keep a track to make sure those things get fixed and brought into compliance. So that's just the list of items we want to fix based on our observations or feedback we've received from others.
Okay, thanks, Christian. Anu, maybe you can figure out a better way of wording, because people who would read that, if I didn't understand, I've been with you all since 2017. Maybe we ought to use a term that's more recognizable by not only the members, but by the public who read the minutes. But anyway, that's my report. Thank you, Christian.
Good. Questions for Tino. Tino, and you'll be at Bus Rail this month. You'll be looking at the Red Line shutdown and
Right.
what they're going to be doing and when and all of that. It should be an interesting report. I think it'll be quite extensive, particularly Red Line out here is going to be could be somewhat disrupted, but we'll see. I think they've done this before, but the red line's going to be of interest. So that'll be
Yeah,
good.
sure. Next meeting.
Yep. Very good. Paul, you're up next with Metro Access.
All right. So last month we used most of our Metro Access time to go through our bylaws and take in comments, and I'm happy to say finished with that process. So right now what I'm doing and working with Anu is taking in during that meeting minutes, looking at it and making sure everyone's comments are incorporated into these draft bylaws. And we are still taking comments from other people like Steve and Doris and Tino, or anyone else who wants to submit comments, because Anu has said we are submitting this draft by what Anu by the end of June, and so I would like Anu to have like a polished
June 3rd, Paul. AAC
June
meeting,
3rd.
June. Yes.
By June 3rd, AAC. So if anyone has any other comments you need me to incorporate, and I can work with you. Maybe did you want to set a deadline for that so you can send it to people probably by mid-month to see if there's any other last-minute things that need to be incorporated well before probably Memorial Day, if I'm correct. That way staff can help do any, technical edits that need to be done, like spelling, all that stuff, grammar, before it goes to the board.
Good call. Okay. And what do you have upcoming this month on Metro Access?
So what we have is the board's decision about this budget and a thorough discussion about that. That's the first major topic. The next topic I propose is we're going back to our customer guide. Since we've been doing a flurry of new wonderful technologies and things, there's just several short brief things I wanted to suggest to management and any other committee can in terms of things that need to be updated in the customer guide in the light of several new emerging technologies that we're using now for communication or what have you, and what customers have available to them. Just a brief discussion about that. And finally, there's a topic about abilities right update and non-dedicated service providers that Mr. Blake will be presenting.
Very good. And just to give you guys a summary of the RAC meeting, the three topics that were discussed. One, of course, was the budget, which we had an extensive topic tonight. Alex covered.
And on
Oh, I'm
in the
sorry,
next
Paul.
meeting, no, I just say our next meeting will be specifically with Mr. Blake facilitating and his wonderful staff, mostly Mr. Blake, what does it look like for us as Metro Access users very specifically in terms of fare, service area, and any other questions that people might have.
Chair right. Sheehan, this is a new Sandy Newsell has raised her hand. Sandy, go ahead.
Go ahead, Sandy. Yes. This is for Paul. Sandy?
No, this is for the AAC in general. I'm sorry that Zoom flipped me out of the meeting when we were approving the minutes. And there's a typo. At one point it says 2025, where it should say 2015. On page 3, first paragraph, next to last line in the paragraph. And my other question comment is about when Sarah Meyer talks to us at the bus rail subcommittee next week. Could we give her a heads up that we, I for one, and somebody in my low vision community, a blind person asked, is there any progress towards considering using it's a digital, it's a color QR code, Navi, I think it's called Navi Lens. And I think Sarah Myers mentioned it once that was being considered for a wayfinding tool within Metro. So if she could be given a heads up.
Right, okay. And I will also say that the Waymaps, a Waymap is a, another wayfinding tool, the quest they're working on. Maybe we'll get a response on that. The other thing, thank you, Sandy. And if I can just add on to that, I would be very interested in, because I'm working with another group that is talking about signage, how they measure color contrast on the signs that they have. I wasn't aware that there are at least 2, 3, or 4 different ways of measuring that color contrast, and that would be of interest to me. Particularly since one of the people that I was talking to who developed signs used the Wamata sign as an example of a sign that had poor color contrast. And I'm sure that was pre-Sarah, but I'll find out. That would be of interest to me. And that might be a little bit technical, but I think it's, you know, Sandy, I would appreciate it, you know, if you had any insights into color contrast and how visual or visible these signs are, that would be great for me to know.
I'll do my best.
Good. You'll do a better job than me. I'll give you that much. Very good. Let's see. Oh, and I was talking a little bit about the RAC report. So the RAC talked about 3 different topics. One, they gave they had a very extensive discussion on the red line shutdown that will be coming up. And we, of course, will hear that in bus rail. So that'll be, we'll be sort of caught up on that information. The second was with their annual report, which the board is a product that the RAC gives that mainly talks about outreach to customers on bus and rail. I had submitted a portion of Metro Access on that, as I did last year. The board felt that was a very good product, and they praised the RAC for it, and the RAC is going to try to implement or at least research some of their suggestions. And then the third topic that they discussed, of course, was the budget impact on bus and rail and overall briefing that we received tonight. So we're very much in line with what they're doing as far as speakers going forward. Anu, are there any other hands raised? If not, I can ask for a motion to adjourn.
Philip Weintraub just raised his hand. Phil, go ahead.
Okay, Philip.
I noticed the last thing that you've been talking about, something about a red line shutdown. Is that going to involve the entire red line or certain stops or and when?
So, no, it's not the entire red line. It's more towards Silver Spring. It's going to be about 4 to 5 stations. The team is coming next week at the bus and rail subcommittee to share information about how about the shuttles, about the bus services that's going to connect people going from one station to the other. So that's what Patrick,
it's not going to impact anywhere between Rockville and Metro Center, would it?
It will not.
So we will get more extensive information at Bus Rail. And so I'd invite everyone to come to that, and you'll get your, as Anu said, answers to the questions with respect to when, where, what they're doing about buses, how they're going to let people know, what they're going to do for communication plans and all that sort of thing. Very good.
I do not see any more hands up at this point.
All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
No move. No,
and I have a second. Do
Next
I hear
second.
Any?
Paul, yes, come
do,
with second.
Do I hear any objections? If not, thank you, committee, for an excellent meeting. And we'll see you at an AAC meeting next month. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, Philippa.